101.5 FM. This is CIOI, Hamilton's home for alternative.
Happy Tuesday, everybody. I'm Sarah Jessica, and this is Hot Shots on Air. And thank you so much for tuning in this week. I really appreciate it. Tonight, I'm hanging out with Adrian Murchison. I should probably confirm how to say your last name first.
That was perfect.
Perfect. Okay, great. Glad I got it right. Adrian is the lead vocalist of alternative rock slash grunge band The Fledge, based here in Hamilton. You can find Adrian online on socials under The Fledge Music and on all streaming services under The Fledge. Did you want to plug any like personal accounts?
I don't really do a lot on social media myself.
No problem.
That's mostly just for bands. I have another band, Bad Dates. We have some stuff there. So
there we go.
That's just search Bad Dates on streaming platforms and you'll find it.
Check that out as well, guys. And, Adrian, how would you describe your sound and style as a musician?
I think actually, I have more than one project because I don't think I like everything I write fits into one sort of, you know, genre.
Yeah.
So for this project specifically, when I started writing these songs, the only band I had going at the time was Bad Dates, and it became very sort of clear very early that these were not Bad Dates songs. Hmm. Bad Dates is more like a punk band, hardcore, like post-hardcore band.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, lots of verses and choruses. This is more of, you know, there's more linear writing. There's less sort of hooks and stuff in it. So for this project, I would say it's kind of an experiment and not confining myself to any sort of songwriting conventions. And also like sort of loud. It's very loud.
Right. Yeah.
And moody is the other thing that I've heard from people. It's a very moody record. So
for sure. Yes. Yeah. Are you familiar with Bad Crush in Hamilton?
I know the band name, yeah, absolutely.
Because okay. I was going to say very similar names, and you're both like punk bands, and very
yeah,
funny.
Yeah.
Very funny. Who would you say are your biggest musical influences?
My biggest musical influence for sure is a band called Pile.
Mm-hmm.
They're from the States. I don't think anything I write really sounds like Pile. But I really draw a lot from there as Rick, the main guy in that band, his approach to songwriting and his pacing of songwriting and the way he approaches lyrics. Like I draw a lot from that sort of style. I take it to a completely different place, but he would be sort of, his writing would be the biggest influence on me. I also listen to a lot of like Genesis, Phil Collins, Peter Gabriel type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously that's a lot of that is a little more poppy, but I just, you know, I appreciate the way they put songs together as well. So those are probably the two biggest overall influences on me.
Mm-hmm.
There have been some bands, I grew up in Hamilton sort of when Sonic Onion was, you know, in their heyday.
Mm-hmm.
And bands like Chore and Shell of North Dakota, were on that label, and they were definitely like seeing those kind of bands at like 13. They had a huge impact on me, and it's like this was not like anything that I, you know, was on the radio at the time. Very different, very aggressive, very heavy, and I think that hearing that stuff and being interested in that stuff at such a young age really sort of put me on a path, and you can hear that in the songs that I've written my entire life. That sort of, you know, the aesthetic that they have is something that I've carried over into my music as well.
Yeah, totally. And you saw Pile recently. How was that?
I did. I saw them on the weekend. I drove 9 hours to Providence.
Wow.
It was a journey.
Worth it.
It was a great drive. It's actually a really pretty drive, but it's a long time to be in a car.
Mm-hmm.
And we rented a car, and I was the only licensed driver, so I had to drive the whole way both ways.
It's like, oh, I'll yikes! Do it. You
know, I love this band. It's no problem. I'll drive 18 hours.
Mm-hmm.
It was amazing. They haven't played a show since before the pandemic, so it was their first, you know, full band show. They played a bunch of old stuff and a bunch of B sides, and it was just like. It was amazing, right? I've never seen the full band live. I've seen Rick play by himself. He did a solo tour, and he was in Toronto a couple of months ago. But that was the first time I got to see my favorite band live. So that's pretty special.
Well, congrats. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, no problem. What do you feel as though you take from your biggest musical influences? Like, is that a sense of style? Is that, like, production? Is that stage presence?
So from Pyle, I think it for sure is just an approach to the philosophy of songwriting.
Mm-hmm.
Like they have a lot of songs that are linear as well. They don't feel the need to verse, chorus, bridge, outro, you know, that sort of like formulaic music.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for this, The Fledge specifically, I drew a lot from that approach to songwriting. Like a song just is what it is. And I wasn't trying to like form it into anything, you know, just play and be like, okay, well, I'm just going to, you know, play this one part for 80% of the song. Then there's three short parts after that. That's the whole song. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not at all how Bad Dates write songs or other bands I've been in write songs where we just kind of let it, you know, evolve naturally and not try and make it anything, you know, at a certain length or hooks or anything like that. So I think that for this project, I drew a lot of inspiration from the way that they write. In that sense that they don't put themselves in the boxes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, for sure.
But it doesn't sound anything like Pyle. Like you put this record up against any Pyle record, you know, it's not immediately clear that where the influence is coming from, but it is there, and it's a very strong one.
Yeah, and I think that's the point. You don't want to sound like somebody else. You want to be influenced by them, you know?
Right, yeah. Exactly. So that influence is not necessarily like, a sonic influence, right? Or, mm-hmm. You know, the keys that we're writing in or anything like that. It's just the approach that band takes to songwriting is something that I, you know, really like and wanted to sort of draw from.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember what you listened to as a kid? Like what was played around you growing up?
Yeah, I do. So my parents had a pretty big vinyl. I was born in 80, so you know the records were everywhere when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom listened to a lot of punk rock, so there was like, you know, Ramones and Iggy Pop and Susie Quattro.
Cool.
And my dad listened to more of the heavier stuff, so it was like, you know, Black Sabbath and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
He also really liked Bruce Springsteen, who I'm a pretty big fan of.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of music in my house growing up, and I have very, you know, early vivid memories of sitting on the floor in front of the record player with the vinyls out and looking at the art, you know, flipping the records and stuff. And I think that you know, obviously shaped me and turned me into a musician or a lover of music.
Yeah, totally. And do you feel as though those early influences have an impact on your current style?
Yes. How could they not, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe they had more of an impact, like these punk bands that I listened to when I was younger, on the like philosophy of music more than the sound of music.
Okay.
These sort of, you know, anti-establishment rebellious bands that I think their attitudes maybe more influenced me more than the actual sounds. But probably if you listen to my bands from high school, you know, when I was, you know, 14 playing a guitar, they would sound exactly like those bands, right? Because that was the first sort of things I was listening to.
Mm-hmm. And when did you first get into playing music? Did you start on an instrument? Did you start with vocals? Where did that begin?
I started with guitar. I was in a band called Kitchens and Bathrooms and another band called Inflation Kills with a guy named Phil Williams. And we met at like a camp counselor thing when we were, you know, maybe 13.
Mm-hmm.
And we were like, we should start a band. And I had a guitar and he didn't. So I played guitar and he sang. And that's sort of how we figured out that first band, which was, you know, was terrible. But I started on guitar. And then I moved to bass for Kitchens and Bathrooms when that band started. And I played bass for a long time. And
right.
Then I migrated back to the guitar couch later mm-hmm. and singing after that.
Yeah. Are there any instruments that you don't play that you would like to?
I would like to be better at drums mm-hmm. for sure. I think everybody, you know, when you're in the jam space, whatever you don't play is the instrument you want to play a lot of the times, right? So you're, you know, I know how to play guitar, I know how to play bass, but I'm in the practice room. The drums always look the most fun for sure. Mm-hmm. I play a little bit of piano. I'm not great at it. I just use it for, you know, working on melodies and stuff. Mm-hmm. But guitar and bass are the main ones. And I think drums, I would say for sure, is you know, the one I would want to, in a fantasy world, play. But mm-hmm. it takes a lot of coordination that I just don't have.
You don't think so? Do you think you take lessons?
I do take lessons, not for drums. I actually started for this project taking both guitar and vocal lessons. Like I've been playing guitar since I was a kid. But I was always sort of self-taught. Mm-hmm. So I went through a breakup, and you know, as a lot of people do after something like that happens, they look at what they want in their lives. And music has always been very important to me, and I decided that I wanted to learn more of the theory and the formalities of music. So I got a guitar teacher and I got a vocal teacher, and I've been doing that for about a year.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And I find that most musicians have sort of like an aha moment right before they start creating music, where they listen to an album or a song, or they discover a band, and it's the sort of thing that wakes them up and they go, wow, I wish I made that. Now I want to create music. Do you feel as though you had that moment?
I've had that moment many times.
Cool.
Where I hear a band and it's like, oh, I've been doing it wrong.
Yeah.
Pile was, that's, I know I keep talking about Pile, but, that the first time I heard that band, that was a big, like, wow moment mm-hmm. for me. Like, another band, is Kowloon World City, and they're a band actually that we sound a little bit more like than the other, influences I've mentioned. But when I started listening to them, it was like, yeah, I really dig the sound of this band and, how they produce their records and, you know, the tension that they put in their songs and stuff. So that's another big one that, when I first heard that, I was like, wow. Oh, and I guess also, I don't know if you know, Refused. Okay. The first time I heard that band obviously a long time ago. The first time I heard The Shape of Punk to Come, my mind was just, you know, it exploded. I was like, this is a fantastic record.
Yeah.
Those are the first ones that come to mind.
Mm-hmm. Did you have a sense of confidence from the get-go, or did that take some time to build?
For this record or being a musician in general?
Being a musician in general. Yeah. Let's go to like the very beginning. Yeah.
The answer is no to both.
Yeah.
No, not at all.
Mm-hmm.
So I played bass in Kitchens and Bathrooms and The Inflation Kills. And that, you know, I was in the background in those bands. I was still, you know, helping write and a big part of the way the songs came out, but I was never front and center. I'm actually pretty shy when it comes to that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, the first time I moved, to guitar and vocals at the same time was for a band called Pneumatic Transit. And I was so scared that first show. I was, you know, actually worried that no sound was going to come out of my mouth when I stepped up to the microphone. So mm-hmm. there was no, the confidence for me, on stage and live anyway has been a process of, it's not even confidence. I don't think at this point, I think it's just like the terror isn't there. It's more of, I'm slightly more comfortable performing right. in a live setting than right. I used to be.
What has helped you, on that journey to feeling more comfortable on stage?
I think, repetition, just doing it so much. I've played so many shows over the years with so many bands and toured. And I think just, you know, you adapt to that sort of thing mm-hmm. where you're, you know, I have to play every night. I have a 2 month tour. Like there's no way you can't play. You're playing the show. So you go through that process. You get up, you play, you know, it's okay. You get a little more comfortable the next time, you know, it builds on itself
mm-hmm.
for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So I think just like exposure therapy has helped, helps with that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And did you go to school for music or like take any lessons?
Not when I was a kid. I mean, I took music in school. I played like sax in grade school, tenor and baritone. I took a little bit of piano in high school, but up until these like lessons that I've been taking the last year, it's all been self-taught for the most part.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what do you think was the most important lesson that you took away from those times being taught music?
I think just to enjoy it, right? To enjoy the process. Like, I've always known that, like, music would never be, it's very hard in Canada to make music a career. There are very few people who are able to do it, like, as a job. So I think I realized early on when I was playing that I should just be playing because I enjoy it, not to hit any sort of, like, you know, I'm going to do this for a living. I just, like, this also is, like, built over the years, where I just play music because I enjoy it. I make records because I enjoy making records. Mm-hmm. But it's not, I'm not working towards, like, I want to do this as a full-time job, you know, and be a musician. Like, I know that is a very difficult thing to do. Mm-hmm. So I guess, like, that changes the way you look at success, right? Like, it's like, I don't need to sell X amount of records to consider it a success. I just need to make something that I'm happy with and record that mm-hmm. and put it out. So. Mm-hmm.
Do you still consider music a bit of a hobby for you?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. It's like a hobby and a passion. Like, I don't spend my 20s basically on the road for, like, you know, probably the whole decade, like 10 years. And that was, I was in school and then we would tour, and that was more of like a grind. So I think now I view it more as just like a hobby or creative outlet for myself, but I don't worry about what's going to happen with the music I make. The process is far more important to me at this point in my life. Just making the record, creating something with friends, you know, seeing how something shapes when you know, because music always changes. I write a song and I take it to the band, and then of course it changes. Everybody puts their little bit of, you know, personality into it and creativity into it. And that for me, that process is for sure a hobby, and that's the part that I enjoy the most.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And when did you join your first band or perform solo?
So I think my first actual band was with Phil when I had a guitar and he didn't, and we were probably in grade 10. Mm-hmm. We used to play. I was actually very fortunate. I went to Westmount in Hamilton.
Okay.
And they had this thing called band nights. So this was like, you know, this was in the 90s, and Sonic Onion was a thing. So there were all these bands that in this like music scene in the city. So bands like that I mentioned, like Chor and Shell, North Dakota. There was like Gorp, Golden Lake Diner, Smoother. All these like really cool bands were around, and they used to have nights at my school where one of these sort of established local bands that were, you know, obviously older than the kids in the school would come and play at night in the cafeteria. Mm-hmm. And the openers would be like the bands from the school. So the school that I went to, there were, you know, 10 bands in the school, right? It was Rock and Roll High School. So they would have a show and a couple of bands would open. We're all terrible. And then, you know, the headliner would be one of these, you know, cool local bands. And I think that's where we started playing shows. And that's where I, you know, found a love for that.
Yeah, totally. And how was that first performance experience for you?
I'm a terrifying, probably, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. As like a 14-year-old or a 15-year-old on stage in high school. I mean, everything's terrifying when you're in high school.
Yeah.
But, you know, putting yourself out there, it's at that age is scary. But also, you know, it's once it's over, it's really good, right? Mm-hmm. After the first, I still get like this, you know, even after 20 years of playing shows, like the first 5 minutes, you know, there's anxiety and there's stress there, but after that, it's really enjoyable. Mm-hmm. So I like, you know, to this day that happens to me. I get up and it's stressful for the first 5 minutes, and then you're like, okay, this is fine. Mm-hmm. I love this. Mm-hmm. Just finish the show.
Yeah. And how did your family and friends react to you pursuing music?
My family's been very supportive. My mom, you know, she doesn't come as much now because she's older, but when I was playing shows as a teenager or like in my early 20s or whatever, she would come to the show and bring her friends. And, you know, it was awesome to have that support. And, my sister will come to shows too. Yeah. Her husband comes to shows. So they're very supportive. Mm-hmm. I have nieces now that think it's kind of cool that, you know, whenever I'm on the radio or I put something out, I get to listen to it. So I like that, you know, it's a cool uncle or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's a nice feeling. My friends, most of my friends growing up that are still my friends today were all in music at that age, right? Like, because I've been doing it for so long, the people in my life that are friends are also in this world. So everybody supports each other, which is really nice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what was the music scene like in Hamilton growing up? And what do you think has changed throughout the years?
So, like I said, Sonic Onion was a massive force when I was a teenager and in my early 20s. We actually, Kitchens Bathrooms was on Sonic Onion eventually, but that, so that was like, they set the tone, obviously, these bands that were on Sonic Onion, the ones I've mentioned, Tristan Sionic as well, like all these cool, really cool, sort of not necessarily what you would hear on the radio type of bands, mm-hmm. doing this really creative stuff. That was the scene when I was a kid, right? And so there was like always cool shows going on. And it was just like vibrant, but a lot of it was not, it wasn't as, I think now it's more, you know, things like Supercrawl are great, but they're like, it's a very sort of commercialized version of the stuff that was happening, you know, 15 years ago or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, it's good for the city to have music festivals and people are paying attention to Hamilton and stuff. And yeah, that's why you have, I think, bands like, you know, the Arkells and Monster Truck and Terra Lightfoot are so successful, is because there has been a community for much longer than those groups that I mentioned have been popular. There was a lot of groundwork before that, right, that through the 90s and then early 2000s that sort of laid the foundation for the success that we're seeing now. So mm-hmm. Hamilton's always been a music city, right? Even before that, you know, Teenage Headforgotten Rebels, like we have a pretty storied history of good music coming out of the city. And we get overshadowed by Toronto a lot, which is unfortunate.
Yeah.
But I think that you know, per capita, Hamilton really, as long as, I mean, I've lived in Hamilton my whole life, as long as I've been involved with music, it just seems like there's so much talent in the city and there are so many bands, and like, it is pretty tight knit. Like, a lot of these musicians know each other, right? And they know each other for 5, 10, 15, 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty cool, right, to see. And the success of that is, like, there used to be, you know, clubs like Hudson and the Raven. Like, the Raven was tiny, but all these amazing bands would come through, right? And now I think sort of that those are the seeds that have grown into these, like, big festivals that we have in the area. And I think that's pretty cool to have been able to watch that over the years, how that's progressed.
Yeah. And have you ever thought about leaving Hamilton? Why stay around the city?
To move?
Mm-hmm.
No, I like Hamilton. You know, I've been here forever. I travel a lot, so it feels like home. Like, I spent a lot of time, like I said, touring with bands over the years, and I travel for work. And so being able to come back here, it's very familiar. It's very comfortable. My family's here. My friends are here. So I don't, I haven't found a reason to leave yet. And I'm not saying that I wouldn't, but, you know, I like it here.
Sure. Yeah, why not? And who are some talented local artists that you think deserve more spotlight?
That deserve more spotlight?
Mm-hmm.
Local bands.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bunch.
Oh, yeah.
I think Not Of is a, they're sort of local, like they're in the same jam space as us, but that's a band I think that is incredible, and they should get a little more attention than they do. Who else in this city? Lee Reed, I really like. And he's, I don't know if you know Lee Reed. He's sort of out of the rock. What you do, probably, your journalist question. I think that he has something relevant to say all the time. Mm-hmm. And I think that more people should, not even just like, do you like what he's doing musically, but like the content of what he's doing. I think he's always sort of got his finger on the pulse of what's going wrong.
Yeah.
And, you know, is able to communicate that in a way that's entertaining. And I think that he should be someone that more people are listening to, because he's very smart. He's like relentlessly irreverent, and you know, he's a guy that more people should be listening to, for sure. Get Tired. Marco from my band, his other band, they're great. They should, they do pretty well, but they could always do more. Mm-hmm. Nice, heavy band out of the city.
Yeah.
So those are probably the three.
Okay. No problem. And, if you could collaborate with any musician, totally go big on that one. So literally anybody, who would you choose?
In the world?
Yeah.
At any time?
Mm-hmm.
That's a massive question. Who would I call? I mean, obviously, like, my immediate answer would be Rick from Pile, but I don't want to keep talking about Pile, so think of somebody else. Maybe The Who. I'm a big fan of, like, the drums on and the sounds on those records. And I think they're criminally underrated as far as classic rock bands go.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, anybody from Genesis would be cool.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And same question, but a local band or artist. Is there anyone you want to collab with around here?
That I would want to, John Crossingham from Not Of.
Mm. Cool.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. He is so, the way he makes, produces guitar sounds and tones, I would love to be in a room with him while that happens.
Awesome.
He gets an unreal sound. And he plays out of like 6 amps or whatever, and everything's like super fine tuned. He really understands tone. So
right.
I would love to jam with him.
Cool, cool. And we're going to hit pause on this conversation for a quick second and play everyone listening a single from The Fledge. Harm and Correction is the second single off of their 2022 EP, Hunter, about pandemic anxiety, political protests, and a bad breakup. For anyone just joining us, this is Hot Shots On Air, and tonight I'm speaking with the Hamiltonian vocalist Adrian Murchison of alt-rock slash grunge band The Fledge. We just came back from playing Harm and Correction. How long did it take to write that song?
So the music for that song came together pretty quickly. I came up with the guitar, like the skeleton anyway, the guitar parts, pretty quickly. I didn't write lyrics for that song until in the studio. Like I had ideas and I had things penned out, but I hadn't like finalized anything. Okay. So I guess it took like maybe if you add it all together, it would have been written over a period of like, you know, 5-6 months, but that wasn't like a focus period of that. It was sort of like, here's the music. I've got ideas for the lyrics, but I'll figure out the melodies in the studio or while we're recording, sort of thing.
Sure. Yeah. How long do your songs take to write generally?
I mean that like Commons on this record took like, I don't know, 20 minutes. I remember with that, I had it, excuse me, and I took it to the band. I was like, is this a thing? Is this a song? And they were like, absolutely, that's a song. I was like, okay. You know, so I came up with that very quickly, the main line and the vocal flow. It varies. That was very quick, like 20 minutes. And then, you know, a couple of months for the other ones, maybe total to like write a skeleton, get the lyrics, take it to the band. You know, it changes with the band, obviously it gets formed, so usually it takes a few months to get it where you want it, and sometimes it happens, you know, very quickly, less than an hour.
Yeah. And where do the lyrics come from this song?
From Harm and Correction?
Yes.
So those, part of it is about somebody I knew, part of it is about sort of the weight of the pandemic and how that, I mean, a lot of this record is the themes run through all of the songs. So I had a death in my family, and I went through a breakup with a long-term partner, and there was a pandemic going on. So, to pull like one, the songs aren't really separate from each other in that way. They're sort of all about those three things. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, just the weight of those things, right? It's a very, the record is very much a reflection record of what was going on in the world and what these two people meant to me. So that's sort of what the lyrics are about.
Yeah. And who did you produce that with?
Marco Brissett actually produced the record as well. He's in the band and he has a studio, and I've done 4 or 5 records with him in the past, or like recording sessions. He's recorded all the Bad Date stuff. So it was, that's an easy, you know, Marco's in the band because of the way he records, right? I was like, oh, who could I get to play with me? And he was at the, you know, the top of that list because, I've known him forever, and I knew the kind of sound I was going to get from his studio because I've done it so many times. So that was probably the easiest part of making this record, is where are we going to do it?
Right.
Marco was actually in Kitchens and Bathrooms as well, way back. You know, he's on the first Kitchens and Bathrooms record. So we've known each other for years. He went to grade school with my sister. Like we've had a relationship for forever. So
yeah. And what do you hope your listeners will take away from this song?
I'm not really big on telling people how they should interpret a piece of art or music. Okay. So I do hope that people take something away from it that is fantastic. Like if I can write a song and somebody can hear it and it can have an effect on them, whether, you know, emotional or politically or, you know, whatever, I think that's great. As for the, you know, the specifics of what that effect is, I don't think that's any of my business, right? Like I put it out there, my part is done. You listen to it, and how you interpret that and how it applies to your life at that moment, that's a very personal thing for the listener, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't think that they should take anything specific away from it, but it does mean a lot to me when people come up and say, hey, that, you know, over the years, that song, I really like it. It, you know, I thought of this when you wrote the lyrics or whatever. And I think that part is very special. But as for like, I wrote this song and you should feel a certain way about it, I don't think I have any business saying that to anybody who's listening to music.
Mm-hmm. And when did you start putting together Hunter?
So probably late 2020, some of the stuff started coming together, but it would have been like early 2021 where I actually started structuring everything. It's been a weird, it's hard to put timelines together now with the pandemic. It's like, oh, was that a week ago or 3 years ago?
Did the project turn out the way that you envisioned?
It turned out, I think, better than I envisioned. Like, awesome. I just, when I was writing the songs, it was just, it was like something that had to come out of me, right? I've been through all this stuff, and I was, you know, it was a very therapeutic process. And I didn't really have a ton of expectation. It's like a side project. This is like a side project, quote unquote. So I just, I wanted to record it. But the way it sounds, the job that Marco did recording and that Ryan and Kevin did and Marco did playing, they really elevated the music, right? They really made it better. Actually, I think Harmon Correction is a very good example of that. Like, I'm playing two notes for most of that song, and there's a lot going on in that song, but it's not me, right? So I think that it turned out, the songs that I had written and turned out much better than they were when I wrote them because of the work that the guys did on the record. And that's pretty amazing, right? That they were able to just add a layer to it, and it sort of became something that I'm pretty proud of. I think it's, regardless of how, you know, well it's received or if it, you know, we play a ton of shows or whatever, like I'm happy with the piece of art that we turned out. And I think that's all I'm really interested in at the end of the day.
Yeah. And what was the general reaction upon release?
It's been pretty good. I've got a I've got a bunch of messages and from people about you know, that they enjoyed it and they liked it. That we're getting a fair number of plays on all streaming services. A fair number for the stuff that I do. It's you know, not millions, but yeah, it's the reception has been pretty. You know, favorable so far. Gunner, Jamie Smith, who works at that same station. When I talked to him about it, he was like, oh, I listened to it. It's really good. Like, it sounds really good. He's like, then I listened to it again specifically for the lyrics. He's basically like, are you okay, man? Like, you need to talk about anything? This is much darker than the other stuff that you've done. So, there has been some sort of that reception to the lyrics specifically. Like, wow, sounds like you were going through some stuff, which I was, right? So that makes sense. It is not a happy record, but it is it's sort of a snapshot of a very brief period of my life that has had a pretty major effect on me.
And how did the band meet?
So I've known Marco since we were kids. Like I said, he was he was in grade school with my sister, and then he was in Kitchens and Bathrooms. So I've known Marco for over 20 years, for 30 years maybe now, geez. Ryan, who played drums on the record, he's the drummer for Bad Dates. So I've known him for a long, long time. He's been another guy, like Marco and Ryan are two of the guys that have been in band since I was much, much younger, playing the same all-ages shows, you know, when they're 90s and early 2000s. So I've known these guys, sort of came up in Hamilton music community together. So I've known them both for forever. Kevin, I didn't know as well. Kevin was actually like in another band that was in the jam space that I'm in.
Okay.
And he's sort of the guy I've known for the least amount of time. And I just asked him, like, I like the way he plays bass, and I said, hey, do you want to be part of this? And we've actually become pretty good friends since over the last, you know, year and a half, whatever, of knowing each other. He actually came to Pyle with me in Providence this weekend. So
oh, nice.
I've got him hooked on Pyle, which is nice. But yeah, so two of the guys I've known forever, and Kevin not so long. And our new drummer, our actual drummer from the band, I've only known him for a little bit as well. He's in a band called Plan Dilemma, and he's in another band called Red Lace, local bands. And they actually shared, I met him, they had a jam space next to Bad Dates, and that's how we met few years ago. So I knew I would need a drummer after the record, so I reached out to him. He was like, yeah, I'd love to play. So.
Yeah. Do you all share the same influences?
No, not even close. not even close. Marco's all over the place. He's like one of the best guitarists ever, and he listens to everything from like jazz to, you know, metal, and everything in between. So Not Marco. Kevin likes the weaker bands a lot.
Okay.
He likes American football, bands like that. So I like those bands too. There's some overlap there, obviously. Like I like some of these bands as well. But as for like, you know, the stuff you put on first thing in the morning, they're all very different. Rob listens to a lot of like rock and like post rock and stuff.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah. And how did you decide on your sound then with such kind of, you know, conflicting influences?
I don't think we decided on the sound. I think the sound just happened. Yeah. Right? It's like, you know, this is the music that is coming out of me at that period in time. That's like, I think I mentioned it earlier, like when I was starting to write these songs, like these are clearly not Bad Date songs. Mm-hmm. They're just, this is just what's coming out. This is the expression of sound that I'm making at this time. There was no conscious effort to say, I want to sound like Between X and Z or whatever. And then I think the other guys, they just add what they think works with that sound. Right. And, it became what it was, but there was never any sort of like, we want to sound like this conversation. Sure. That's not, I don't think that's good, you know, for a new band. You know, maybe if you're trying to switch directions, you have a bit more of those conversations. But I really think that when you start for a first record or a new band, you should, I mean, for me anyway, I don't want to speak for every artist on the planet, but for me, I think it's important to just let it be what it's going to be.
Yeah.
And not try it. Cause it doesn't, people, you can tell when somebody's forcing something into a genre or it has to sound like this or, you know, whatever that I think that a lot of, you know, most people can hear that when they listen to that it's not a genuine, you know,
right.
Piece of art or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Almost like they're trying a bit too hard to like fit into a box.
Right. Yeah. Well, we should all just be able to be free to create what we want to create. Right. And let that come out the way it comes out. And that's super beautiful. Right. When it's just like this very natural process of a musician or an artist or a writer or whatever, just creating something and letting it be what it is. I think that is one of the most beautiful things about being human is that, things can just come out of you and you don't know what it's going to be until it's done. Right. Like it's just enjoy the process of what you're expressing.
Yeah. What does the Fledge mean and why did you choose it?
The Fledge is, it's like a bird, you know, when it learns how to fly, leaves the nest, a fledgling. So that's where it comes from. And I think just because again, like I had this really intense period of my life. Mm-hmm. And there's sort of like, I think we all have moments in our life that there's like, okay, there's before this period and then there's after this period.
Yeah.
And so this is like a new thing for me. So I think that the name reflects that sort of, you know, rebirth or whatever you want to call it, leaving on a new journey, a new path.
And how do you see the Fledge's sound evolving as you guys create as a band?
That's a good question. I like that question. Yeah. So the Hunter is part of two EPs. There's Hunter and there's Gatherer. So this is, I have the songs for the other part and they are, they also developed, you know, very organically and naturally, but they sound slightly different. They're a little bit more connected. They're a little bit more, the guys have been involved a little bit more in the songwriting process. So it's the next group of songs will be slightly less aggressive, slightly more hopeful, sort of like the flip side of a coin that came out of me. Like it was, as I was processing all this stuff, it's like, this is the first part of going through this. This is the second part of going through this. So I think it will be, a little more hopeful, a little more optimistic than this record. We'll see when it turns out. I mean, it could, you know, that process changes as you go. But so I think that for that next group, like we've always planned, this is two EPs, that will be the sound. After that, I have no idea. Like, I don't know what the next group of stuff is going to turn. Just let, you know, I'll follow this, hopefully follow the same philosophy where I just let it be what it is. Then I think that gets harder as you put out, you know, releases for a band, because once you've established this is what this band sounds like, it's a lot harder to just take off in another direction if that's the way your heart's telling you to go. But I really want to be able to do that with this band. So that, you know, it would never do that. But if it turned into like a country record, then, you know, we'd put out a country record.
Yeah.
I can't see that happening, but the philosophy of letting it be what it is, it will still be in that third release whenever that comes out.
Totally. Yeah. And do you have a favorite single of yours?
Of mine?
Mm-hmm.
No, I hate them all equally. I don't know. I don't, I was not, prepared for that question. No, I guess I said like the first response in my head is the best is like, no, they're all, you know, they're like kids. You know, mm-hmm. They all frustrate you equally. You hope for the best for them and then they let you down. No, I don't have a favorite. I don't.
Okay.
Not at this point. I may, like, on any given day, be like, you know, at a band practice, be like, oh, I really like this song today, but I don't think there's any. Mm-hmm. I don't have a defined favorite song.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel as though your style as an artist has changed since you first started creating music?
So I think when I was really young, I was just emulating the bands that I liked before I really had, you know, my, like at 15, you just sort of sound exactly like whatever you listen to at that age.
Mm-hmm.
So you haven't really developed your own sound. For me anyway, I hadn't really developed my own sound. I think from there, like it's weird because Kitchens and Bathrooms, those records came out, like that band started in 1998.
Mm-hmm.
And those three records are probably the closest sounding music to the Fledge that I've made since that time period. Like Pneumatic Transit and Inflation Kills were very like, you know, they were traditional song structures in those songs. Kitchens and Bathrooms, you know, we had the same sort of, you know, 12-minute song, nothing repeats, you know, no choruses, anything. So I've kind of gone like full circle where like once I learned how to play at, you know, 18, whatever, like really play in Kitchens and Bathrooms, and we didn't really, you know, force ourselves into anything. I've come back around to that with this project, right? Like, so like Pneumatic Transit, the Inflation Kills, Bad Dates are all very like, you could hear them on commercial radio, some of the songs, right? Where these two projects that sort of bookended in my, you know, my history of music are definitely not those kind of bands.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, you know, getting back to what I did naturally as like a 20-year-old is maybe how I've progressed. So I've gone through that like arc of like, you know, it needs to sound a certain way. This is a song that could potentially be on the radio, to back to, I don't care, I just want to make something that makes me happy, which is what I was doing when I was, you know, 20. So
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think maybe that has a lot more to do with like the hobby aspect of it now, or the like, I'm doing this because I enjoy it, as opposed to I'm doing this because I want to go on tour for 4 months.
Totally.
Like at 20 years old with Kitchen and Bathrooms, those records, we were just making them because it was all, you know, we just love making music and we're excited about it. And we didn't know any better to, you know, you're supposed to have a chorus in a song. Mm-hmm. Or whatever. So I've come back around to that sort of philosophy of just like, you know, do what you love, you know, listen, you know, whatever comes out, that's fine. It doesn't have to be anything to sort of be what it is.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other forms of art besides music that you've wanted to dip your toes into, but haven't yet?
I write, you know, I write a little bit. I went to school for journalism.
Okay.
And I write poetry, you know. I've never ever done anything with it, but I do have like a few books of you know, poems lying around, and you know, just like not essays, but just like thoughts on stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I do actually pick from that sometimes, like if I need a line in a song and I'm just stumped, like if I have, you know, 7 of 8 lines on something, and I can go back and find something. But maybe one day I'll do something with that. I'm terrible at like visual arts. Like drawing is not my thing at all. I think it's super cool, and you know, I wish I could do it. But I think anybody can if they put time in. Right? There's you can get to a certain level through practice. But I definitely do not have the natural affinity for visual art, but I do have an appreciation for it.
Yeah, I mean, you could take lessons. You could, you know. Okay.
Yeah, of course, right? Like I think everybody can get to a certain skill with enough time and energy and effort in something. I just, you know, there's only so many hours in the day, and music is the most important thing to me. So the vocals and lessons, guitar lessons I'm taking, that's where I'm focusing my energy. It's like, okay, like for this record, I'm taking vocal lessons because I really want to elevate the way my vocals sound for this record and the next record and the next record. So let's put in the work on that. So I've made that choice that, like, that's the art that I want to get more proficient in.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And what have you, this is a bit of a heavy question, but what have you found to be the most difficult part of the creation process for you personally?
That's a very good question. For me on this record, I think because it's so personal, right? Mm-hmm. Like other bands I've been in, I'm writing about stuff outside of myself, or politics or video games or, you know, whatever pop culture that I've written about. Mm-hmm. That I think is a lot easier to share with people. But these songs are fully about my life and reflection on my life.
Yeah.
And so writing that, and I really, really try to be honest with the lyrics. There's a couple of sarcastic things in there. I just can't help myself. But for the most part, they're very raw, very honest lyrics. So writing that down on a piece of paper and then showing that to somebody that, like, you know, you feel very exposed. And I think that's the hardest thing for me, is to just, like, show that, you know, expose that vulnerability, that honesty, that, like, the flaws that I have in lyrics, and just be like, here it is, you know, for anybody who wants to see it. Mm-hmm. That is very, very difficult for me to do, to just be that open for anybody, right? Like, I can do it with people who I'm close to. That's, you know, that's an important part of, like, interpersonal relationships. But to just toss it out onto the internet is, like, that is not an easy thing for me.
Did that feel kind of like therapeutic or like even empowering to release those emotions and release that piece of art?
Oh, 100%. 100%. Mm-hmm. It's like journaling, right? But you usually don't, like, you know, you burn that when you're done. Mm-hmm. Whatever.
Yeah.
Right. My normal songwriting process is very focused outward. Right. So this inward process is much more, you know, it's intimate with myself, but also when you show people, you're showing them, you know, your insides, sort of thing. You're cracking yourself open and letting them take a look. And I think that's hard for anybody, right? To do that. But yeah, it was super therapeutic. And like, it very much was like writing a journal or doing like a therapy session when I wrote these lyrics.
Mm-hmm. And, what can we look forward to seeing from you?
To sing for me on another record, the Gather, we're working on that now. Bad Dates actually has, like, we've been on hiatus since the pandemic because of some health issues, but we have like almost a whole new record written.
Wow.
So yeah, like, we had a bunch of songs before the pandemic that we had written. We actually recorded a two-song single that hasn't come out since, you know, it was supposed to come out, I think, in like April of 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And we made a decision with our record label to just hold it until we were playing again. Because we're on a small record label. They don't really have the funds to just like toss away releases, and we respect that. We're playing a show at the Casbah in July with Science Ferric. That'll be, you know, good time.
Awesome.
We'll probably play some more shows around. I've started to send this out to like local promoters in different cities for booking shows, but I'm so bad at that promotion that I make a record, spend all this time and energy on it, and then nothing happens with it. You know, it's the follow through on it, because for me the point is making it.
Yeah,
it's a lot harder to motivate me to actually, like, you know, book a bunch of shows, because that's not as important to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work. It is a lot of work. And I it's not, I do it because I know it's part, I've been doing this for so long that I know that it's part of what you have to do, but I'm not good at it, you know, and I don't enjoy writing, you know, trying to sell my band to other people. Like, as if you like it, you like it. It's the same as like telling you what to think about a song. And I don't have that personality.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, I don't enjoy doing that stuff, like pushing out, you know, this is what you should think of this, and this is what we want to do. Like, it makes me a little uncomfortable. The Bad Dates record, the first Bad Dates record, we recorded and just put it on Bandcamp and didn't really do anything with it, right? And eventually a label picked it up. It's like, we didn't push that either, right? Like, it's just, I don't know, it seems weird to, you know, spend all that energy and time and money to make a record and then not doing anything with it, but it's mm-hmm. that's what I want to do. that's the part I like.
Yeah. Well, you know, it only takes, you know, time and, you know, getting used to reaching out to people for promotion and everything, and then you get the hang of it, right?
For sure. And you think after like 20 years, I would know how to do this better. But like I was when we were at Sonic Gandhi, we had a publicist who did all that stuff for us, right?
Right.
And in the Inflation Kills, the singer in that band very much enjoyed that part of the, you know, being in a band. So that, you know, he pushed those things forward. But it's not what comes naturally to me. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. For sure.
I just want to write songs.
Yeah. Well, everybody listening, you can find Adrian online on socials under The Fledge Music and on all streaming services under The Fledge. And thank you so much for joining me tonight. This is really fun.
Thank you for having me. I really, really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me. It's very nice of you.
Yeah, anytime. And we're going to wrap up this episode with another single from The Fledge. Box Office is the final single off of their 2022 EP about the romanticization of Hollywood and seeing a familiar face on screen.
Hi, this is Adrian Murchison of The Fledge, and you are listening to Hot Shots on Air on Indie 101.5 FM.